Off the Ball Breakfast.
I have not seen a minute of this tournament.
That's what the cool kids say these days.
Genuinely haven't.
Everyone's saying that. I haven't seen a second of it.
It's not a thing. It hasn't even...
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Tuesday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. We're going to be speaking to Richie Hogan from 7:30 for his verdict on the All-Ireland Hurling semi-finals over the course of the weekend. After 8 o'clock, we're going to have Stewie Byrne here in studio. We're going to have Darren Murphy on the line. Stewie was playing for Shells and Darren was playing for Linfield when the sides met in the Setanta Cup final 20 years ago, which Stewie says is one of the worst moments of his career. And Darren, I suspect, is going to say it was one of the best moments of his career. Of course, they're playing tomorrow night in the first leg of their Champions League qualification tie. So that is the context for that. After 9 o'clock, then we're going to be catching up with Tommy Rooney. We're going to be hearing his interviews with Kerry manager Jack O'Connor, Meath manager Robbie Brennan ahead of this weekend's All-Ireland football semi-finals. And with Wimbledon ongoing, we're going to be speaking to Georgia Drummy a little bit later on. She was once Ireland's best junior in women's tennis before eventually having to give up the sport due to back injuries. So it's a bit of a heartbreaking story, to be fair. She's hoping to get back involved in the sport in some capacity, and she's going to join us in studio a little bit later on. Our number is 0879 180 180, and you can get in touch with us on WhatsApp using that number. Cameron Hill's News Round is coming up momentarily. Cameron, how are you doing?
Good evening, Owen.
And Stephen Doyle is here as well. Steve-O, how are things?
Evening, lads.
You suspect that the people of Cork might be furious tonight, Steve-O.
Well, I have to tread carefully here, don't I? Because I was speaking about Cork people last night as well, and I really don't want to be upsetting.
You're trying to win them back, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right.
Listen. Celtic playing Cork City tonight in the Cork Super Cup at Super Value Páirc Uí Chaoimh. All well and good. We know there are three Irish players in the Celtic squad, Johnny Kenny, Liam Scales and Adam Ida. Now, Brendan Rodgers did say before they came into camp that the international players involved in matches back in June, that's not just the Irish ones, there's a number of internationals in that Celtic squad, that they wouldn't be involved this week, that they were obviously just returning to training on Monday and they wouldn't be involved this week. So that's fair enough. Now, the one thing I would say, though, is that Adam Ida, obviously he's from Cork. He played for College Corinthians before moving off to play to sign for Norwich City. And he has obviously moved on from there now to Celtic, has carved out a decent career for himself. He's probably got, I'd say, you know, there will be mixed views of Adam Ida among the Celtic supporters, but he has done pretty well there. Of course, scored that famous goal against Rangers in the Scottish Cup final a couple of years ago. But he's been front and centre of the match promotion for this game. He's gone down to his old club, College Corinthians. He was with the Lord Mayor, I think it was last night, himself and the captain, Callum McGregor and Brendan Rodgers. He's been all over the posters. He's on the front of the match programme down at Páirc Uí Chaoimh. One of our colleagues in Cork, Rory O'Hagan, informs me he reckons over 30,000 there. And that there's a lot of supporters there from Cork who want to go see their local favourite, Adam Ida, playing for Celtic.
And when they announced the squad tonight?
He's not in the squad.
He's not in the squad. Liam Scales?
Liam Scales is not in the squad either. But Johnny Kenny started for Celtic tonight. So if you're from Sligo and happen to be down in Cork, you'd be delighted to see your fellow Sligo man, Johnny Kenny, in the famous green and white hoops.
Is there a chance he's injured?
Look, we don't know until after the match. Brendan Rodgers, I'm sure, will inform the media as to why he was left out of the squad. He may have a slight knock. Now, I went onto the Celtic website because earlier I'd seen a tweet of photographs from the training session up on the official Celtic website. Had a quick look through them. There's about three or four photographs, which includes the aforementioned Adam Ida. And he's taken a, you know, you would say like it's not just running around the pitch or anything like that. He's involved in the little five-a-sides, whatever the case may be. And it looks like he's taken a really serious part in it. So you'd have to guess that he is fit. Now, Brendan Rodgers was asked by Rory O'Hagan in the build-up to the match yesterday, you know,
you know, talking about the excitement of Adamida coming back to his hometown, all this kind of stuff. And Rogers was like, yeah, you know, it's great. And I told him last season he's going to be very excited to come back to play in Cork, all this kind of stuff. Now, he didn't directly say he was going to be playing.
Yeah, he just said it was very exciting for him. It's great for him to be back in his roots. Maybe Adamida was just excited about going back to Casey's Chipper in Douglas. And that was the point that Brendan Rogers was referencing. He didn't explicitly say he is going to be in the matchday squad or in the starting 11. You would suspect that was the plan. Something surely has happened somewhere. Yeah. Like, unless this is like masterful mind games to try and annex a Cork Super Cup.
Yeah, this is what it takes.
Try and hoodwink,
you know,
Cork City. It does feel like I don't know. I've no explanation for it other than the fact that he clearly has picked up something.
Yeah. Now, the tickets are expensive. They're not cheap. And I'm not too sure exactly how the gate is divided up between the clubs, but you can be damn sure Celtic charge a big fee to play these pre-season friendlies. So they are due to pocket money from this. And the fact that they would sell the game on the base of Adamida coming back to his hometown.
You do have the likes of Callum McGregor, Arnie Engels in the starting team. It's strong enough starting 11, and I'm sure a lot of people there are Celtic fans.
Yeah, 100%.
Obviously, I'm not quite saying for one second that people haven't shown up to watch Adamida, but I'm not sure Celtic fans are getting shortchanged, because these are the people that they watch week in, week out, and are massive fans of as well, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And look, those supporters would have been well aware before the match that Brendan Rodgers had made the comments about the international players within the squad. So, and look, do you know something? There's a lot of Celtic supporters really excited about Johnny Kenny because he had a strong finish to last season. I've been saying for years, since I've seen him coming through the ranks at Sligo Rovers, this fella really excites me because he's got a bit of everything. He's got pace. He's got a really good talent at finishing. He showed that in Europe for Shamrock Rovers at the end of last year. And I think he's got a big, big season ahead of him. I think he could make a big mark at Parkhead this season. So it's great for Celtic supporters, you know, here in this country to see him playing. But I just think it's just the fact that Adamida was front and centre of the promotion, as I mentioned to you, you know, they really used him to sell tickets. Mm. And then he's not in the squad. And how much we were going through the prices earlier, Cam, I think there was a 45-35 in the stand for the tickets, 45 for adults, 35 for children. And, you know, that's pricey enough. And if you're bringing a family there, and especially a couple of kids, maybe you want to go see Adam Eda playing, they'll be hugely, hugely disappointed.
I remember Owen Doyle was telling me once when he was here on a Saturday that Celtic is the most highly sought after pre-season opposition, like, just not just in the UK and Ireland, but across Europe, because you know you're going to have a really big turnout. It's going to be a huge draw because of the prestige of, like, the Celtic legend and the Celtic legacy, not just in Scottish football, but across Europe. So, like, those prices kind of make sense. But as you say, it is kind of disappointing. Like, I'm looking through Sports Files photos here and there's no sign of Eda at all. So maybe he has picked up a knock, but even...
Yeah. Well, the only other thing I was thinking is he perhaps got... scored the hottest ticket in town in Cork tonight, which is to see Roy Keane with Roddy Doyle at the Marquee. Yeah.
Special guest.
Like, who could turn down that? Like, if you're a Cork man and you get a ticket to go see Roy Keane,
listen, Brendan,
you're not going to say
really
no.
You wanted to be there.
It's like the Late Late Toy Show when they surprise a child with their hero. Roy Keane, here's your hero, Adamida. And Roy Keane breaks down in tears.
That is behind a cardboard cutout of Adamida.
Yeah.
And then, oh, we'll get you the real thing.
What a night for Cork football. Jeez.
In case you missed this morning's Off the Ball breakfast,
we had this.
The Cork are just about viable favourites. They've beaten Tip twice, so you could be afraid that the same thing would happen again. But I'm not really, because I just think that Tip have really nothing to lose. I mean, a defeat in the Iron Fine is not going to hold us up, really, to be honest with you.
And we also had this.
Ali McCoys was absolutely hilarious. I remember Ali goes to me, we're going to be having a fair few pints of Guinness here, so... they take a while to pour, so when I want another round for the lads, I'm just going to give you a nod, all right? And I was like, yeah, no problem. So he takes the 3 pints, walks over, puts them down, turns around and nods at me. And I was like, oh wow, this is going to be a long night.
You can catch everything from this morning's Off the Ball breakfast elsewhere on the Go Loud app, and every weekday morning from 7:30.
Right, the news round is here with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us. to help you get back in action. You're going to start with the tennis tonight, Cameron.
Yes, indeed, Owen, because world number one Aryna Sabalenka is through to the semi-finals at Wimbledon. Despite being given a big scare in her quarter-final today, she fell behind to German world number 104 Lara Siegmund and was broken twice in the deciding set before eventually seeing out the win on centre court. Sabalenka says she knew she'd have to be mentally strong today to get the better of the notoriously tricky Siegmund.
It was very, very tough. You always out of the rhythm. Like, you know, you just have to honestly kind of like mentally win the match, you know, like be ready to fight for every point. There was like no easy points. And especially after, I mean, I don't know, I cannot compare right now. I have to watch both matches, but it felt like she was trying to do maybe not the same game style that Coco was doing against me in Roland Garros, because today was also windy. But probably was a good, I think there was some similarity in the game, and I'm really proud that I handled myself really well and I didn't repeat the same mistake I did at the French Open.
Yeah, she'll face 13 seed Amanda Anisimova in the last four. The American booked her place in just her second Grand Slam semi-final, beating Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova in straight sets. Defending champion Carlos Alcaraz made light work of Cameron Norrie, has to be said, in his quarterfinal today. Straight sets win to book his place in the final four, while Taylor Fritz became the first American to reach the men's semifinals since 2018, the fifth seed beating Karen Khachanov in four sets on court number one.
Yeah.
I was reading Lara Siegmund, as Cam was mentioning there, 104 she's ranked in the world. That was her first ever quarterfinal at a Grand Slam. And she was the sixth player to make the quarterfinals of the women's singles at the age of 37. We're not talking about a player here in the prime of her career. And she really had Sabalenka on the rack right up until the very end, because they went into a deciding set and Sabalenka had to reel off three games in a row to seal the match, because she's going to break down in that third set. And like, she just, I think you said it, we were watching the TV, Cam, like she just has to beat herself, doesn't she? Like, it's just, it's incredible. But Siegmund, her opponent, has written a book, which Sabalenka, if she's listening, I recommend she could do with picking up and reading. The book is called Wildcard. What's the subtitle? Wildcard, Mastering the Mental Game of Tennis. Here's the blurb. It's written from the perspective of a world-class tennis player, Lara Siegmund. Wildcard equips any athlete with the tools to develop concentration, focus, resilience, the ability to handle mistakes and self-regulation, all that the high-performance athlete needs to master the mental game.
And why are you suggesting that Sabalenka picks it up? Are you suggesting that she is mentally weak and needs to work on this particular area of her game?
No, or? I think probably the opposite. You need to learn from the best. Like, Siegmund is known for being an absolute SH1T house on tour. Like, she takes forever to serve.
Okay.
In Wimbledon, they have a shot clock of 25 seconds you have to serve, and she'll eat up all of the time when she's serving, to the point where it really annoys her opponents. I remember Coco Gauff got in a huge scrap with the umpire saying, is there anything you can do about this? Because it seems, is this in the rules or the codes? And was getting very, very triggered by this. I think it happened as well against, it happened this tournament too. So she's known for being very, very tricky and knowing how to get into the minds of her opponents. And it nearly worked today. Like, Sabalenka,
yeah, well, she really did wind
Sabalenka
up.
Starting to fray, yeah.
Gavin has been in touch, folks. He says, regarding the Adamida thing, mm-hmm. I believe there was a similar situation where Lionel Messi featured heavily in the promotion of an Inter-Miami match, but did not play. These things happen when you have the likes of Adamida and Lionel Messi at your club. good point, Gavin.
I can't
very
add
good
to
point.
That. Yeah. That's a really
That's
good
a
point.
That's a really good point.
Back in your box, Stephen Doyle. Spare us.
The Adamida premium.
Where do you want to go next, Cameron?
Well, Australia have been hit with a major injury blow ahead of their test series with the Lions. Outhalf Noah Lolasio has been ruled out of all three games after undergoing surgery on a neck injury. Lolasio, who had been a regular under Joe Schmidt, left the Wallabies weekend win against Fiji in a neck brace. So they are down an outhalf option. Ben Donaldson, the only outhalf option among the three in the Wallaby squad, who has double caps, double figure caps. So very inexperienced. Maybe you're starting to hit the James O'Connor or Bernard Foley.
That would add something to it.
Great.
yeah. That'll be their Owen Farrell moment. Johnny Sexton was out talking as well.
Yeah, and he insists they're fully aware of the threat that the Brumbies will pose in tomorrow's meeting in Canberra. Andy Farrell's side take on the Super Rugby outfit tomorrow in the Australian capital. That's 12 years on from a 14-12 defeat to the same club on their last tour of Australia. And Sexton says the tourists know that the Brumbies would love nothing more than to claim another surprise win.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, when you play for the Lions, you got to realise how much it means to the opposition as well, and we're fully aware of that. We've seen it in everywhere we've gone. You know, the first couple of games, you know, scoreline got away, but it doesn't reflect how tough the game was. Obviously, the Waratah, the scoreline didn't go like that, and we know how tough it was. So, yeah, the Brumbies will be waiting for us for the last, you know, it's all they've been probably thinking about for the last 5 or 6 weeks, and they'll be well prepared for it. It was a really tough game here 12 years ago. I remember even watching the one 12 years before that, and I think it was a last minute kick to win it from Matt Dawson, and so you know these games, they're not as important as the tests, but people still remember them. Like I remember the one 24 years ago, so it just shows you that they're special occasions, and looking forward to tomorrow.
It's a really difficult time in the tour to actually assess the various form lines, because when Australia limp over the line against Fiji at the weekend, you think to yourself, geez, this Australian team isn't up to much. But that Fiji team is surely better than the Waratahs team that the Lions beat at the weekend. And granted, if it's not the first choice test team, the quality of player that the Lions had out against the Waratahs is probably of a higher quality than the players the Wallabies had out. So it's actually the Lions' results more worrying from last weekend than the Wallabies' results. Because it feels that it's all very one-sided, where it's like, the Australians don't stand a chance in these tests.
I think when they select their first choice team, the Lions...
Should the second choice Lions team not be sensational as well?
Yeah, but your pick, like the injury to Henry Pollock was a bit of a spanner in the works, because it meant that Tadhg Byrne had to go to six, and he's not been great at six in the last year or so. He's already said it. He's been on the record saying that he hates playing in that position. He much prefers playing in the second row, and has kind of built himself now to be a better second row than a flanker just in his prep over the last few years. So that's been tough. I mean, Josh van der Fleer isn't exactly pulling up trees at the moment. I think Jack Morgan is in pole position to take the open side slot. So we'll see tomorrow. You know, that'll be really telling as to where this Lions team are at. But to be honest, emotionally, I've been very checked out of this tour. It hasn't caught my attention at all.
Is there any potential for unrest in the Lions camp with the addition of Owen Farrell? Because there seems to be a feeling amongst the, say, some media members of our Celtic cousins countries, Wales and Scotland, that maybe there's a bit of nepotism going on there with Owen Farrell.
If you ask me, will there be unrest involving any member of the Lions squad? Honestly, my human reaction to that is hopefully. Hopefully there's going to be unrest. Yeah. It's the result of this thing actually is
like
normally
the Welsh player would surely be really angry.
The Welsh player, yeah. I think that Owen Farrell is actually a fairly positive influence. It's the media depiction of Owen Farrell from their own, actually, quite often in England, is vastly different to the reality of the man. I've only interviewed him once, to be fair, but certainly from players who've played with him, like Brian O'Driscoll when he speaks to us, or anybody else who knows him well, they're all saying the same thing about him being a very good tourist and a decent man. They're not all lying. In fact, I suspect none of them are lying, and I would trust their insight more than anything else. So it's unlikely, but hopefully we're all wrong, and this guy really is, you know,
a
wielder of evil.
Stirring up.
Yeah, and listen, look, today's news aside, it's obviously a massive blow for Australia. You just feel it's the first game is the opportunity for Joe Schmidt to try, and I think he's going to have a plan. He's going to, stating the obvious there, but I think this is the game where he might feel, I've got a real chance here of putting out a game plan that will totally scupper their Lions' chance of that first test win. And that's I think that's the best we can hope for in this test series as well, because I think we kind of need Australia to win the first match.
Oh, yeah. It would be a disaster for them. Like 2 years out from World Cup, if they get absolutely spanked over three tests by the Lions, the morale would be at such an all-time low.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is that from what we saw last weekend, I don't understand why that expectation is now a real thing. Like, I obviously rate the second string Lions team higher than you, and probably higher than a lot of people as well. I'm not necessarily sure it's going to happen, which is not necessarily a great statement of where the Lions are at the moment. But I guess we'll glean a little bit more information tomorrow, because tomorrow is their strongest team that they've put out. They're up against the Brumbies at 11 a.m. Do you want to round us up with the rest of today's sports news, Cameron?
Yeah, speaking of team news, Owen, Ireland head coach Neil Doak has made four changes to his team for tomorrow's game against New Zealand at the Under-20 World Rugby Championship. Oisin Minogue and Conor Kennelly come into the pack, while in the back line, Johnny Scott and Daniel Green will start. They're second in Pool C, but need a win to have any chance of making the semi-finals in Italy. Now, Republic of Ireland midfielder Lily Ag has put pen to a one-year contract extension with Birmingham City. The 31-year-old will remain with the Women's Super League 2 side until the summer of 2026 as they bid to return to the English top flight. Ag, who has 11 caps for Ireland, moved from London City Lionesses in 2023. She suffered a season-ending ACL injury back in January and told Birmingham club media that getting back on the pitch is her immediate goal.
I think first and foremost, yeah, getting on the pitch, it's difficult. I think when you're out for such a long period of time and you don't just come back and you don't just get plopped straight in, it's going to be a lot of hurdles to overcome. But I'm confident within sort of my ability and where, you know, my mindset is, the cliche of you come back stronger. I don't doubt that. I think I'm doing everything I can to do that, and I'm working tirelessly behind the scenes. So my plan will be to get back on the pitch and then hopefully help the team and contribute in whatever way I can.
Going through the rest of the news then, and Germany have booked their place in the knockout stages at the Women's Euros. 2-1 win over Denmark has all but sealed their qualification. Sweden take on Poland in the other game in that group tonight in Lucerne from 8 o'clock. In other Euros news then today, the Wales team coach have been involved in a road traffic collision on its way to training in Switzerland today. No one on board the coach or in the other vehicle involved is believed to have been hurt. Wales take on France in the second of their games in Group D tomorrow. And the Dublin County Board has expressed deep sadness over the death of legendary All-Ireland winning captain Sean the Doc Doherty. The captain of Kevin Heffernan's first All-Ireland winning team in 1974 has passed away at the age of 78. He's described by Dublin GAA as a no-nonsense fullback who inspired those around him. Doherty was part of a Dublin team that contested five consecutive All-Ireland deciders, winning a total of three.
A big figure in your upbringing?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I texted my dad earlier today just asking, and kind of echoed some of the words that we read on the on the county board statement, just, you know, that he's a really tough operator, but a really classy, skillful footballer. Played for Ballyboden. But I suppose, look, the fact that he was chosen by Kevin Heffernan to captain Dublin for his first All-Ireland final in charge of that great Dublin team, going on to playing five consecutive finals, which is really incredible when you think about it, to win three of them as well. And obviously a key and integral part of that. And I thought the county board chairman, Ken O'Sullivan, had some lovely words in the statement there. He said, Sean Doherty, a classy fullback and a giant of a man at the heart of Dublin's fullback line in the late 60s and the 70s. He's an icon in Dublin GAA's history and an inspiration to so many who tried to follow in his footsteps.
Okay, we would do the Tour de France before we wrap up as well, Cameron.
Yeah, cyclist Tadej Pogačar has claimed a 100 victory of his career by winning stage 4 of the Tour de France today. The defending champion has moved level on time with Mathieu van der Poel in the yellow jersey. Ben Healy has moved up to 35th after today's stage, with Eddie Dunbar now 55th.
Cameron Hill, thank you for Tuesday's news round. Stephen Doyle, thank you for coming into studio as well. We're going to be speaking to Richie Hogan next. He'll give his verdict on the All-Ireland hurling semi-finals last weekend. We're going to take a quick break, and before that, it's the Cash Machine.
The news round on Off the Ball
with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.